Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here it is, the end of the month. January. On to February.
On to February. You know, February, is this a leap year? No, it just has the regular 28 days?
Well, that's a good question. Let's take a look.
I don't think it's a leap year. Could be. Got to get our date and timestamps here.
28.
Here's a question for you. How many months in the year have 28 days?
One.
No. All of them.
Ah, yeah.
Gotcha.
That's a rewrite of the joke. Hey, do they have 4th of July in Canada? Same joke.
All right, let's do a quick update of what's going on here and some of the things we're going to be talking about this evening. It's a full week back on the markets are open. Big week of economic updates as well as earnings. As a matter of fact, I think this week is the week with the most earnings for S&P companies and Dow Jones industrial companies out of all the weeks of the earnings season. So,
yeah, it's earnings week.
We have a government shutdown, strike that, government back open.
We have more
arrests in the Mueller investigation. Is it Mueller or Mueller?
I like to say Mueller because then it rhymes with Bueller, so you can do the bit from the movie.
Mueller. You know, the latest arrest, Roger Stone, was in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, not too far away from my house.
Oh, really? Did you get to see all the SWAT team go by?
I did see the helicopters. The most interesting thing I thought—
Was he going to fly off? Is he Superman? What are they worried about?
No, they had all the coverage. It was amazing how CNN was there at 6 a.m., don't you think?
Oh, yeah.
And the guy wasn't tipped off. He said, what did he say? He said he was a hunch. He was just there because he knew that something was going on with the federal courts and something was finishing up. And he thought that something would be coming down any day. So he decided to camp out in front of this guy's house at 6 a.m.
Yeah.
Made no sense.
Yeah. Not unless he's getting paid overtime and he's not.
And the next 2 days there was helicopters again, because every time that he would go to the federal courthouse or whatever was going on, at least if nothing else,
they have to waste taxpayers' money on choppers.
No, I don't think it was. It was the news. It was the news.
The news choppers.
Yeah, the news choppers was just overhead the whole time.
No.
Yep. We're going to be talking about some of our latest stock picks and the closest to the pin, which is going on right now, and it's actually in progress for Cleveland Cliffs. So some of the things we'll be talking about this evening. Thank you for joining us. All right, what are we talking about with the market? We finished last week virtually flat. There was a couple of nice updates. There was some down days, but generally speaking, it was flat. The NASDAQ, the S&P finished slightly lower. Dow Jones Industrial Average was positive. The U.S. dollar was taking a hit as there's news circulating. The new news from the Fed, the most recent news, is that they may be close to an end of their balance sheet reduction, the normalization plan that they have. So first they come out with balls to the wall. They're going to be raising rates, hella high water, all of 2018. Remember that, right? So the guy's just on a rate hike path that's indestructible.
Right, maniac.
Then the markets do a flippity flop on them and get all pissed off. And all of a sudden, you know, it looks like we could be flexible now. We could be patient.
Which is what I predicted.
Yeah. And now they're coming out with, well, you know, we had about $4.5 trillion of balance sheet assets that we bought up over the last decade. Whether it was
we got to dump.
Yeah, that we got to get rid of. And what we're going to do, this is back when, we're going to slowly let that roll off. Any of the assets that mature and the interest payments, we're not going to buy more bonds with those. It's going to take some time to normalize, but we're going to do that. And that was effectively a bit of a tightening, maybe not a rate increase, but a tightening and drawing liquidity down. So now he comes out with his flexibility statement and he's going to be flexible. And now they have nothing else they could say. So they talk about, well, we're thinking that we're close to the end of our balance sheet normalization. Now we're only going to be at $4 trillion. 10% into the balance sheet normalization process, they call a halt to it. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Huh.
So they increased it by about 300% over the last few years. A drawdown of 10%. Now there's panic with the Fed governors. So, But if you look at it, actually, the increasing and the decreasing of the balance sheet coincides pretty well to the increase and decrease of the stock market.
Yeah. Funny coincidence.
Funny.
Well, the way they're doing things, I was looking at the long-term, the monthlies of the Dow Jones. And if you look at it from different, you know, you can look at it, the dailies or the weeklies. But this, if you look at the monthlies over the long haul, you see a very interesting, it appears to be a head and shoulders about to form.
On the Dow?
Yeah.
So what is that telling you?
Well, it's telling me that, it depends. I mean, if you can get past the all-time high, which I think is 28 or something like that. It looks like it went up and got to about 26, then went down, then went up to 20, then it did that all-time high, then it came, now it's been in a downtrend, and it starts going up again. It has to go past the old high, or it's like head and shoulders, and I think that would cause a nice, at least a six-month downturn, probably a recession.
So right now we're in the right shoulder,
yeah,
of the upside trend. Did we pass? I haven't looked at this. Did you notice if we passed the former left shoulder high?
No, we're still down. We're still at the bottom. In other words, you have a left shoulder that is an upside down V.
Right.
We're and then there's the big up.
Yes.
Which is the head. And now the other one, then it went, what is it doing?
Right. It went down over the last 3 months. Now
it picked down
up.
And,
It went up.
Yeah, it went down. It hasn't picked up. It's starting to pick up. So we're just seeing the formation of the second shoulder.
Right. Usually you won't get past that left shoulder, the first shoulder. Or that could be the next high. Approximately within a couple of bucks. And then if it doesn't do that, it rolls over down, and then you possibly have the neckline to deal with, which is the calculation of the top of the peak down to the neckline of the two shoulders, right. And then take that and then draw it down, and that's what your target is.
Right.
Which would not be.
Well, I was looking at it, and I was seeing the potential for it going to like 16,000.
Wow.
15, something like that.
Oh, that would be kind of painful.
That would be a correction.
Yes, it would be. Well, we have some of the makings of it. You know, you have, we'll talk about John Williams in a little while, not the conductor, but the economist. But there's a lot of things that are playing into this right now. You have the shutdown that took off some money from the GDP, some points on it kind of shaved it off. You have the trade wars that are going on. Now you have earnings coming out, and we have a variety of earnings that have been, I would say, not so great in terms of their beats. But more importantly, the guidance has been pretty awful. Caterpillar released earnings this week. Not a great report overall, but their expectations of what's happening in China, of course, blaming on China and trade, guided lower. Stock was down 8%. NVIDIA, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, just lowered their guidance. Stock was down like 17% after it's come down significantly as well. And then you add the other things into it, the fact that, you know, you have the rest of the world slowing down, and then you have all these other comparisons of where we were to now, and you got this makings of a potential for a significant slowdown with GDP. Now, John Williams, you sent me this video that John Williams, you got to stay away from sharp objects when you're watching this video. The first thing was that the interviewer was a clod. I mean, he was, what a geeky, freaky deaky. The guy that was running the show?
Yeah, he's not.
Polished?
He's not a very thoughtful guy.
No, he's just.
I've seen some of his other videos. He is a gold bug. And I've seen him get people on, and all he does is hound them until they say, yeah, gold's going to go up. And then he's happy. He's a happy guy because I think he's all in on gold. So he was doing a little bit of that with John Williams, but Williams wasn't having much of it because he said, yeah, it's a good investment, but he was trying to get some other points out. Williams went on about he makes a lot of good points, and then he goes on and he thinks there's going to be a recession in the first quarter, which is what we're sitting in, which would go fine with the head and shoulders that I'm seeing. But I think it would take probably the way the head and shoulders forms on a monthly, it would be 6-9 months from now.
Right, exactly.
I mean, just head and shoulders isn't like, you know, a week of stock activity. It's months and months.
But he's predicting this. He's going out on a limb here because we're not going to see the first quarter GDP for a little while here. But right now, I had predicted, as you recall, that we would see, you know, a kind of decent amount of economic activity through the end of the year. And then the overflow from the pull forward effect or the front loading, whatever you want to call it, into the first quarter was going to start to show up pretty significantly. And that's when we were going to start to see a real slowdown in economic reports. So far, we've seen a little bit of slowdown in manufacturing. Employment is hot as can be. We're going to see a report at the end of this week, the official unemployment report. But we did see that consumer sentiment today dropped down significantly, especially for the outlook. The several components inside of the consumer sentiment index. And what's happening is that you're seeing that consumers are very concerned about the forward look. Current situation is okay, but when they look out further, it dropped off, one of the biggest drops we've seen in a long time. And that makes sense because you see the stock market go down. Yeah,
it kind of makes sense, but it's usually slower moving than that.
It moved pretty hard.
Yeah.
So he sees a recession in the first quarter, which means that pretty much everything right now is in big trouble. And I don't see that necessarily in the numbers appearing. I thought towards the middle to the end of the year, let's call it second quarter-ish, is when the potential for...
Or say third quarter.
Yeah, third quarter. Right around there would be the potential for a recession. And I thought it was going to be a technical recession. What I meant by that was you're going to see that the comparatives and what we saw, and it's going to be possibly short-lived due to the fact that we have higher interest rates and, of course, the government shutdown, trade wars, et cetera. And there was going to be just a normalization from there at a very low rate of GDP growth after. But
well, you have to remember that he blames a couple of things about this guy. One, he blames the whole first quarter recession predicted on the Fed.
Raising rates.
He blamed everything on the Fed.
Mm-hmm. But he didn't like when the Fed was working to help the markets either.
No, he doesn't like the Fed doing anything. And he also seems to be – he's also stuck in an old prediction, which a lot of these guys got stuck with that began with QE1, where he said that he's one of the hyperinflation guys. And there was like tons of these guys coming out of the woodwork about hyperinflation. And there was no hyperinflation. There wasn't – you know, there's – probably more inflation than the numbers, government official numbers, but it's hardly anything out of the ordinary. And then they went to QE2. And the only I was looking back at that era, just following the Swiss franc, which went up during that period. Again, with the fear of hyperinflation, nothing, zip.
And the problem he's stuck. Because he doesn't want to say now that there's not going to be inflation when inflation is finally picking up here. He wouldn't give in to the fact that there was no inflation. One day, one day he'll be right.
Yeah, if you keep yelling hyperinflation, although it's never really happened in this country.
In the 80s, we saw some serious inflation.
Well, it wasn't hyperinflation. Hyperinflation is what's going on in Venezuela, as far as my definition of the word.
Right. I agree with you there. But, you know, for hyperinflation for a developed market, you know, you talk about a 10% inflation rate, which means that the purchasing power of your money gets cut in half every 6 or 7 years.
Yeah.
So for a developed market, that's pretty substantial. We're not talking about the 10,000,000% or whatever it is in Venezuela where people are, what are they trading? What's worth a lot? Bullets? And
if anything's worth more than their bills.
Right.
Bullets.
There's something like that. There are something. Bullets.
Trading bullets. Always stockpile some bullets for trading.
We got to do it. So tomorrow we do have a rate hike decision, and the expectations are 0% chance for a rate hike. But the question is going to be whether or not when he gives his discussion after. So I think 2:15 tomorrow is the rate hike decision. 2:30 is the, or 2 o'clock is the rate hike decision, and 2:30 is the press conference. They let it boil in to see what happens. Probably have multiple speeches that he'll give, depending on how markets react to it.
Well, this should, I think, should set up the head and shoulders. It should start going up after that speech.
You think it should go back up? I mean, there is a general trend or a tendency for markets to go up when the Fed speaks, and ahead of the Fed speaking, and then when they do speak. I think there is the high probability that a lot of expectations are baked in already on the severe dovish side. And if he comes out really dovish, I think there's going to be a blowback, because there's going to be questions as to why is he so dovish from just a couple of months ago when things were just rosy. And all of a sudden, is he, you know, the old, are they seeing something that we're not seeing? I just wonder if there's going to be a backlash from the markets if it gets too dovish. If he goes somewhere in between and says that, you know, we are consistently watching what's going on, we're being flexible, use the same basic speech that he did in, I guess that was in December, or the beginning of January, then maybe things will be okay. But there's a lot of expectations for, we're starting to get expectations for rate cuts the next meeting. And I think in March it is that they're looking at.
Well, that'd be kind of a 30% admission of screwing up.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens with that. News on PG&E, the company in California that keeps the lights on for John and keeps his internet going in terms of power. They are officially filing for bankruptcy. That was the news today.
Yeah.
And the stock was up 15% on that news.
Yeah.
What is that about? Any thoughts?
No idea. Just, I don't know. I don't know.
I read a few things about this, trying to understand. I had a few people call me, some colleagues of mine, freaking out. You know, the kind that call you and freak out about everything.
Yeah.
I went, what is going on? I don't understand what it is. Like, first I said, do you own the stock? No, but I don't understand. I said, what do you care if you don't own the stock? You going to buy the stock? No, it's bankrupt. I'm not going to buy it, but I don't understand. I got to know what's going on. Why is this happening? I said, what do you care? What's the difference? But he went on this whole thing. And I said, listen, let me take a look into this. And I did some reading, and it may be because there is some, a little bit of pressure on the company not to go bankrupt. In other words, they're filing their bankruptcy, but yet I think California and a bunch of lawmakers are looking to possibly stop that because they want to make sure that the company continues running, doesn't discharge its debt, doesn't wipe out the shareholders, and of course will be liable and can pay the claims from the fires, which still hasn't been proven that the recent fires were theirs. Now, the old ones, the ones from 2017, it has been said, and they've been cleared from the liability of that particular fire or those fires in 2017. 2018, the campfire fires, there still is a question as to whether they are liable, and they're the ones that have the ultimate responsibility of this, and if they were found that they were responsible. So I think that if you don't get this bankruptcy, well, there's two things. If you get this bankruptcy, you know, some shorts may want to be covering into it because they want to just get out of it with the nice profit they have. Because if it goes bankrupt, what you're going to have to do is wash out the sale, and then it may take some time to wash versus trading out. But I still think there's a lot of downside for the stock.
Mm.
So we will look to that later. I have an idea.
Okay.
I mentioned NVIDIA lowers Q4 revenue and gross margin guidance, and this happened just on Monday out of the blue. It's like, okay, they came out with this. They said there's deteriorating macroeconomic conditions, particularly in China, impacting consumer demand for NVIDIA gaming chips. The company lowered their guidance. Listen to this. Revenues, they reduced from $2.7 to $2.2 billion. The company lowered their non-GAAP gross margin to about 55 to 57% from 62 to 63. So not only is the deteriorating macroeconomic conditions, particularly in China, they're getting squeezed somehow on their profits.
Yeah, that's what it looks like.
So they also said that the fourth quarter guidance has embedded a sequential decline due to excess mid-range channel inventory following the cryptocurrency boom. In other words, It costs more these days to mine for Bitcoin than it used to. And as a matter of fact, it costs more to mine for it than the Bitcoins are worth. So therefore, they're not seeing all these people get their processors in order to do the mining. So
that's pretty convoluted.
Yeah. There was some
convoluted that it would affect the sales and price of the stock.
Well, I mean, if they're not selling as many chips, that's why.
Yeah, I know, but geez, because of bit mining?
Yeah, that was big. That was a giant part of their business for a couple of years there. The graphics chips were capable of massive amounts of calculations off the base processor, and therefore they were getting all this business from it. So that was interesting because last week we saw several companies in the chip space do pretty well. And they came out with earnings. Matter of fact, we'll talk about that. One of them is Xilinx. We hold that position for clients. All-time high. And we saw several other companies like Lam Research and a few others really do well off of their earnings. And this is in a generally declining market for semiconductors and chips. Intel came out with earnings also, didn't do so well, not a great report. They're having some problems in their server space and a variety of other areas. AMD was out tonight. They were in line with a slight miss on revenue. Meanwhile, the stock was up about 8.5%. So the guidance was a little bit better. But the big news tonight, Apple. Apple came out with earnings tonight. And overall, let me just give you a grade on the earnings or just a quick takeaway. It wasn't so good. But what's interesting is...
didn't slam the stock.
It didn't. The stock was up 4% or so after hours. 4.5% after hours.
Oh, it was down a point, I think, during
the day. Right. So here's what they came out with. They made $4.18 versus $4.17. And by the way, Apple says that they do not guide, nor do they provide any kind of guidance for the benefit of the markets. They do it for themselves and for their own reasons, right? So they're not trying to guide the market necessarily. Meanwhile, let me just tell you something. EPS estimates over the last 90 days dropped from $4.94 down to $4.17. And they came out at $4.18. So there's a 90-day movement of about 80 cents.
That's a lot.
Okay, that's a lot. That's why the stock dropped so much. And they come out just a penny ahead. So close on a major company like this. And they're not necessarily guiding the markets.
No.
The revenues were $84.3 billion versus $84 billion, which was the general consensus. They're seeing their next quarterly revenues at $55 to $59 billion versus about $59 billion. So they're guiding to the lower end of the range and even under what the estimates are. Their gross margins are about the same, 38% versus an estimate of 38%. Exactly, 38.0 versus 38.0, which is what the number they said with their pre-announcement. And they're estimating moving forward a slight reduction in their margin. Most of the blame from Tim Cook went to China. China. Now, they did have
record. Couldn't blame the weather, I guess. That'll be next quarter.
Next quarter. They did have a record earnings. So that's something to say. But still, iPhone sales were down substantially. iPhone, they're not breaking out actual units shipped.
No, they don't want to do that.
Nope. They're down to $51.98 billion versus $61 billion last year. iPad sales were at $6.73 billion versus $5.7. That was good. Mac revenues, $7.4 billion versus $6.8. That was good. And their services are seeing a nice sequential move to the upside. So that's good. But I think there was a relief rally going on here.
What are their services?
Their services are, whether it's cloud, iCloud. They have some business services. They have, I guess it would be anything related to their, what would you call it? iCloud with storage. What are the services? I think, do they include some, they don't include the app store in there, do they? Some of the app store maybe?
Well, I think they'd have to. I don't know.
Well,
I don't know. I mean, I know they have some cloud stuff and some other things, but they're trying to position themselves as an IBM-style service company. Hey, everybody who's done this has failed.
Including IBM.
Including IBM. They're taking a dive. HP, same thing.
Oh, yeah. Remember when they did that and they did the split off and spin off?
Yeah.
Of HP, the service company versus the hardware? That wasn't a great move. Nope. eBay comes in with decent numbers, guided higher. Juniper Networks in line, but guided much lower. Robert Half, the employment firm, beats and guides higher. Whirlpool beats nicely, but provided downside guidance. Meanwhile, the stock was up 8%. Caterpillar missed miserably, as we mentioned. Stock was down significant. Align Technologies, the company that makes the Invisalign, you know, the braces, the Invisalign braces?
Yeah.
They beat nicely, but issued absolutely horrendous, horrible guidance. Now, one of the things that's interesting is when I went and I traveled a number of years ago to Japan and to China. Okay, this is going to sound terrible, so just hold on. Just hear me out. Just don't judge. No judging, okay? I'm judging, but don't judge me. I noticed something. I said, you know, gosh, their teeth are really bad here in Asia. Do you ever notice that?
No, I've never noticed that.
Yep. In Asia, I'm looking around. I'm like talking to people. I'm like, oh, you need braces. They really didn't have a thing about straight teeth there. It wasn't a thing. As a matter of fact, I think
maybe
what
they don't care.
They don't care. You know, there was at a time a few years ago, if you remember, there was a really cool thing that I think it was in Japan. It was cool to have a snaggle tooth.
Oh yeah,
remember that?
I think it's still cool.
It may be, which precludes the idea of having braces unless you do braces everywhere and try to make the snaggle tooth even bigger.
Maybe. You could do that.
Right. But I said back in the day, I said, you know what? One day they're going to, you know, the westernization of Asia continues and one day they're going to care about their teeth. Then I think this company, Align Technologies, is going to be a hot stock. And it was once they got into Asia. Hmm. And then I guess maybe some of the... Maybe either everybody's teeth are straight at this point or they don't want to do it or they're just dealing with, you know, some of these trade issues and they're concerned about buying American products. Maybe somebody copied them over there, which is highly probable. So stock was down about 8%. It was down about 14% at one point tonight and then came down. GameStop is kind of interesting. Company, if you remember, when they came out with the desire to sell and I said, oh, this is a bad deal. Stock went up dramatically. They were going to do strategic alternatives and looking for different ways to maybe sell themselves off or be bought by somebody. They couldn't line up whatever the particular financing and the pricing and it wouldn't work. And so today they announced they're canceling their search for a buyer. Stock was down like 27%.
Yeah. Well, I hope they stay in business. We got a lot of stuff to sell them.
Well, get it done. There's other places to do that, though, right?
I don't know. The kids know all that stuff.
I bet you they don't use GameStop.
They know about it.
Yeah, but that's like GameStop is like, to a degree, GameStop is like Blockbuster Video. It's the same thing. What happened to them with Netflix?
Yeah, well, they do sell other things besides just trading games.
I understand, but that's a big part of the revenue.
Yeah.
So let's talk back to Apple.
Blockbuster pretty much didn't do anything else.
They sold games for a while. Remember that?
Yeah, a little bit.
Let's talk a little bit about Apple. Let's go back to this because I think this is a fascinating story. I'm sure you've been following this. It seems there's a FaceTime bug. Talk about this a little bit.
Oh, apparently this FaceTime bug allows anyone to take a peek into your FaceTime conversation with somebody.
So
that's what it amounts to.
It seems that the way that you would do this is when you call somebody and then you add a call to it to have a group conversation, a group FaceTime conversation. If the first part, so if I call you and then I say, okay, I'm going to add somebody to it. You don't answer. John, you don't answer. I call you FaceTime. You don't answer. At the same time as that's ringing, I add somebody to it into the group chat or the group FaceTime and then add that person. Your phone automatically picks up and I can listen in on whatever's going on there.
Yeah, it's a bug.
That's more than a bug.
You're right. It's a feature.
That's ugly. Yeah, right. That's right. So I don't know about you, but I don't think you have an iPhone or an iPad.
No. If I did, believe me, I'd be doing that gag all the time.
I turned my FaceTime off on my devices. And meanwhile, what's interesting about that is I'd just like to say that somebody called me today on FaceTime before I turned it off on my iPad. That doesn't usually FaceTime me, and that bothered me.
Oh, yeah, I can see that. Now that you're suspicious and this person never calls you before, but they read the article, and next thing you know, they're calling you.
Let's try it out on Horowitz and see what he's talking about. Bad. I thought Apple would react a lot more negatively to that. That seems like a really scary proposition.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about earnings. I got some charts. I got some things.
A feature.
It's a new app. Let's talk about some earnings. I thought this was a really interesting chart that I picked up today. And it looks at the idea of looks at the trend for earnings estimates across the board on the major index. So, for example, if you take a look at this this chart, this is I think it's from Morgan Stanley. I think you can see these charts on DH Unplugged, episode number 441, show notes when the show posts and live. You can just click the button there on the show notes. But this looks at year over year earnings growth. And it looks at the S&P 500 year over year and beats adjusted. So what we see is that we saw earnings pretty flat in 2015 through 16 into 17, started picking up in 17. And then we saw this massive spike in earnings growth at the beginning of 2018.
Well, at the end in particular.
Right. And that was due to the tax cuts.
That was due to your theory.
Tax cuts.
Loading.
Well, no, this is tax cuts.
Tax cuts. I think it was also loading up on inventory.
I don't think so. I think it's all tax cuts. Think about it. If I had earnings of a dollar, now I got a 20% tax break, my earnings go up by 20%. I think without the tax cuts, you wouldn't see anything like this. And that's why markets responded so well. They went a little bit over the top and a little haywire, but they responded well. Now look what's happening. This is the problem that I've been discussing. Earnings growth and consensus estimates have been slashed. You can have zero earnings growth. Now, to be fair, zero earnings growth, and you go back four quarters, one, two, three, four, so you go to the first quarter of 18, it's still significantly higher than it would have been. It's not like we're seeing negative earnings, major earnings growth deterioration, although it's not growth. But even staying at the same level is not the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, that's a big deal. That's true. And then it's not going under the baseline.
Right. So you're not seeing a negative. You're just seeing that it's growing at 1%, 2%. Now, the fourth quarter 2019, that big spike up there that you see, don't believe that. Analysts are always much more positive on the future.
Okay.
So, but I thought this was interesting that this is why we're seeing the markets do what they're doing. Because they went over the top, expectations were high, they got crazy about this, they saw the numbers coming out, and markets basically figured that this kind of earnings growth is going to continue infinitum.
Oh yeah, forever.
And they didn't stop and think, wait a second, we're not going to get this tax break that's going to be the same impact on earnings every single year. It's going to be a one-time thing. The earnings benefit will last, but we're not going to see the same growth. So therefore, the stocks shouldn't keep up with this. Somebody made a boo-boo.
What?
I'm saying the markets made a miscalculation. Let's talk about earnings. Equity flows. This is kind of interesting from Trim Tabs. Every once in a while, there's some interesting stuff they put out. So they just came out with a new statistic on the current flows into funds, into mutual funds and ETFs and things like that. So after pulling record sums is directly from them. After pulling record sums from equity mutual funds in December, mom and pop investors, you could use the mom and pop there, have turned into net buyers in January. U.S. equity mutual funds and global equity mutual funds lost a combined almost $90 billion in December, the highest monthly outflow on record. Now, inflows this month have reached $7.6 billion. Not a lot.
I mean, why did everybody get out?
Why? Because they were freaking out about the market's volatility, 1,000 points a day. So fast we forget that, huh? That was just last month that we're seeing like 3% and 4% moves on a daily basis. People can't handle that.
Isn't that where you're supposed to be in a mutual fund? Because you can't handle that. You just stay in the fund and hope right. for the best.
Right. But what they did is they said, oh, my God, is the market's going to collapse. It's going down 3%, which means if it goes down 3% every day, the market's going to be to zero by the end of the month. that's the thinking. This is why investors need to have a psychologist, which is a great segue into my next point. And then we'll finish this up. This week, coming up.
Yeah, by the way, I'm going to tell you this. I have to tell Adam this once in a while, too. It's never a great segue if you say it's a great segue.
Oh, I see what you mean. I have to just do it like a soft shoe it.
Yeah.
So this week, coming up on the Disciplined Investor podcast, we have Daniel Crosby, who is a behavioral investor specialist, an expert. Wrote a great book recently. This is, his fourth or fifth book on this. Young guy, really good writer. Called The Behavioral Investor. And he'll be on this week talking about the psychology of the markets. Tune in.
That should be outstanding. I'll listen to that one.
Yep. Inflows this month have reached back to this. I'm not segueing. I'm just shooting right into it. Inflows this month have reached an estimated $7.6 billion, putting this month's inflow on track to be the highest since February 2016. Equity mutual funds alone have estimatedly taken in an estimated $3.4 billion in January. And there's your little chart there. We saw outflows since, pretty much outflows the whole, this is kind of interesting. The whole year of 2018, there were outflows.
Yeah.
So this is the first monthly inflow in over a year.
Yeah. Well, good.
So now I need you to put your thinking cap on. Okay. The government is back open for 3 weeks. We agree with that? We agree with that, right?
Yeah.
Okay. February 15th. I believe it's February 15th, is the day that the temporary funding expires. Do we agree with that?
Yeah.
Okay. March 1st is the deadline date for the tariffs on China.
Okay.
So far, so good, right?
Yeah, that could be
extended. How the hell are they going to get both these things done to make this all happen if they can barely get one even close to being done?
Well, I think the question would have, or the answer would have to be, they can't.
Well, I think that's the obvious question. Who's making up this stuff? Who comes up with this 3 week period when it's right in the middle of when you have to get down and dirty with the Chinese to figure out if they're going to do this deal or else their tariffs that are 10% are going to increase to 25%, causing a major meltdown of investors?
Yeah.
And then, and then going to battle about this fakakta wall. Fakakta, that's a Yiddish word.
That's a good old word.
Yeah. So the Congressional Budget Office is now estimating that the shutdown cost the economy $11 billion. $3 billion is going to be permanent. Somewhere between 0.1 and 0.2% of GDP is being shaved off. Let's see here. Do we want to talk about Facebook and this unified messaging shenanigans?
I don't know anything about it.
So Mark Zuckerberg came out and he said he's planning to unify the underlying messaging infrastructure of its WhatsApp, Instagram, and Facebook Messenger. They can't say something easy like, hey, you know what? We're going to allow messaging from all the apps to work with all the apps. So in other words, if you're on Facebook Messenger, what happens is that you will now be able to instant message a Instagram account.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
So there's something all exciting about this. They'll continue to be standalone apps. I don't know. This seems to be exciting. Well, look at my last point. What does this mean and what's the big deal? You can have end-to-end encryption protecting messages from being viewed by anyone except the participants in the conversation. Now, is that what they're adding? And if that is what they're adding, why isn't that currently the situation to begin with?
What, end-to-end encryption?
Yeah.
Good point.
I mean, are they making that a big deal? Like, oh, these are all going to have end-to-end. Well, yeah. Uh-huh. I mean, isn't that, I thought that would be the baseline. Hmm. That's the starting point. We want messaging that's encrypted and it can't be seen by anybody else. Mentioned Intel again here. Shares falling. Cut their guidance. There was actually a good video that I watched. Xilinx has this AI ACAP platform. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's an AI-powered chip that can really do a lot of work in the server environment and taking a lot more instructions and what would be the right word? It would be funneling efficiently.
Yeah, that wouldn't be the word I'd use.
What would you say?
Nonsense.
Aha. Well, the company hit an all-time high, so somebody's buying
it. AI chip.
It's an AI chip, you know.
Yeah. Well, this looks like a stock that I might want to put on my short list. They keep coming out with this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I have to look into this AI ACAP platform.
Yeah, there's a link there that has a video. Tesla is announcing more production hour cuts for its higher-priced electric cars, models S and X. They're doing this. Again, this is new. This is not the same thing we talked about last week. They're doing this to improve efficiency.
Oh, it's not the same thing you talked about last week or the week before that?
This is a brand new cut to further improve efficiencies.
Okay. By reducing production hours?
Yeah.
So in other words, they're closing the place. They're shuttering the place early.
Yeah.
To improve efficiencies.
That's correct.
Uh-huh.
The company was a struggle to achieve long-term profitability, said last
week.
Who's
running? Who's the CEO nowadays? H.G. Wells?
It is pretty bizarre. But earnings are expected January 30th. So probably what they've done is, in order to meet their numbers, once again, they're pulling all sorts of shenanigans to make themselves profitable. Probably what they're doing is going to take a major charge for maybe laying off all these employees, a one-time charge that they could offset, and they'll be putting that in the outside, kind of the side pocket deal. They'll be, you know, doing all sorts of funny business to get this earnings looking right. The earnings are expected January 30th. I saw at 9 p.m., which is very odd. You don't see earnings usually at 9 p.m. I don't know if that's wrong, the information I got, or something unusual. Usually see them about 4:30. 5 o'clock.
Yeah, 9 p.m. That's odd.
There's a conference that Goldman Sachs had this week, and there's a bunch of picks of what's going on from all the conference participants saying, hey, what they believe is going to be the places to invest this year. So once again, they are looking at the best global asset classes this year. And the ones that they saw was, of course, emerging market credit, which is interesting. Last year was emerging market, so bonds, cash. But equities was number one. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah, I'm stunned by that.
Yep.
Stocks. Isn't it always number one?
Always. Always. But cash is in there this year, which is interesting. 25% said that best perform would be emerging market credit. Cash was picked by 14%. Developed market bonds, 13%. That's like the U.S., Canada. Commodities. Oh, I have a question about Canada. Sorry about that. You know the Huawei executive who is now being charged with stealing intellectual property as well as bank fraud?
Yeah.
So currently they're in Canada and the U.S. is demanding extradition to face these charges of the CFO, the daughter of the founder of Huawei.
Right.
Right? If Canada complies, it's going to really piss off China.
Yeah, but it's already pissed off China. They're not going to get any more pissed off. I would definitely comply if I was Canada and then, you know, go, I got nothing to do with it now.
But if they don't comply, it's going to piss off the U.S. Right?
Oh, bigly.
So Canada is in a pickle. No matter what they do, it's not the right answer.
Yeah, they should just shoot her.
Unless they just keep her in Canada, maybe. I didn't think of that. Make her disappear is what you're saying? Just make her just disappear.
Give her a house in Toronto.
Yeah, maybe that's the way.
She's got two places in Vancouver, apparently.
Ah.
Like all the other Chinese, rich Chinese that are in Canada, they buy one house for themselves and two investment properties.
Mm. Somebody in the chat room is saying that 90% of extradition orders comply on a regular basis. That's from chat room participant Yellow. I'm thinking that's not their actual name.
I would be surprised if Canada didn't give her to us and then let us deal with the Chinese.
China's going to be mad at everybody. Nobody's going it's very bad. Very bad. All right, moving along here.
All it says to me is that she's so closely tied with the government that our suspicions have been confirmed about Huawei just being an arm of the military.
It's bad. It's a bad situation, and it's going to be it's bad. They're the number one provider of handset parts, aren't they?
I would think so.
Well, here's where you get information that you don't get anywhere else. That's the benefit of listening to DH Unplugged. That's what I think. I met some people today, and I was talking. I had a group about 35 people over at TradeStation that I was doing a presentation for. Okay. And they saw me, and they said, oh, you know, I know you from here and there. And they said, and I said something about, you know, I do a couple of podcasts a week, by the way. You want to listen to Disciplined Investor. But also, you want to listen to DH Unplugged. They do it with John C. Dvorak. Oh, he's a techie. Oh, John Dvorak. Wait, isn't he the guy that writes for PC Magazine and all that? And the tech guy with those. So got a lot of fans going on. Just let you know.
Yeah, I do have a lot of fans. None of them keep up with what I'm actually doing.
They know about what you did.
I can't say that they're that kind of great fan, but they at least know my name. I have a high name recognition factor.
Ah, that's a kind of a unique name. I don't know any other Dvoraks. Is it a big family? You have a big family?
It's the composer. The composer's.
The keyboard, the composer. That's it.
Yeah.
But my point was that you don't get any of this kind of information anywhere else. And no, if you find value in it, please do us a favor. I'm not going to ask. I'm going to tell you. Go over to the donate button on DH Unplugged and provide us with your love. For the fact that we are working really hard, very diligently, weekend and week out, to come up with what is really going on in the markets, what is happening out there in the world of finance, business, investments, and related matters. And that's how we actually keep this thing going. So if you've never given before, by the way, shame on you. Just go over there. You can give $10. You can give $5 a month. You can give $50. Whatever it is, go over to the... go over right there and to DH Unplugged, click the donate button, or on the show notes, there's a donate button. You can't miss the donate button on the DH Unplugged website. Let's just get this. So if you go, I can't find it. No, it's there. It's there. So please do that over right now and do that.
Yeah. It's like the short-armed guy. Yeah. I can't get into my pocket.
Can't reach. My internet's not working. I listen to you, but my internet's not working. Somehow your site is blocked. All right. Let's go here. So give. And now we have a question from a listener for John. Wrote me today, and this gentleman asked me, I didn't write down his name, but he said, and I quote, do you think John's claim that double-edged safety razors increases nicks and cuts is based on his using the old carbon steel blades back in the day? I read that those would rust more quickly than the stainless blades I use myself these days, than I use these days. As far as he's saying, why are they called safety razors? They are safer to use than a straight razor. I think the term came before the invention of modern cartridge razors that do so darn much, that cost so darn much to refill. So the question is it you're basing your nicks and cuts comment on old carbon steel blades?
By the way, carbon steel blades are fine. You can make them just as sharp as anything. No, I'm basing them, they had stainless steel safety blades and these old clunkers, you screw the thing down. No, it's based on the fact that the blade, the distance from the blade to the protect it and everything, if you go a little bit sideways with these blades, they cut you.
That's true. You have to be
With the modern cartridge razors, it's almost impossible to cut yourself.
You have to be very focused when you shave. You can't just do like a, you know, drunken shave.
No, with a cartridge, you can.
You can just bang that against your face all day long.
Yeah.
And it's not going to cut you. You got to be really doing something pretty on the really the wrong angle.
I've never been able to do it. No. But I know for a fact that those other ones will cut you very easily. And it was rare that you didn't shave yourself and didn't cut yourself.
Yeah, I use a safety razor ever since it was sent to me by a listener. Yeah. He sent me all those razors, the feathers and all that. And I love it. I love it. It's more of a...
I'm not saying they're not sharp. They don't do a good job.
Yeah. No, but
they're
when
great. I mean, it's fantastic. I just don't like cutting myself. I don't have the Styptic pencil anymore. I don't even think they make them.
Yeah, you can get them.
And then there's all the little toilet paper pieces you got to stick all over your face. And you forget they're there. You go to the store. You look like an idiot.
We should make some kind of like toilet paper that actually dissolves. Like little bitty squares that are absorbent but just dissolve.
Yeah, so you have a square spot of blood. I don't think so.
Moving along. We have limited time and lots to talk about. Election 2020 seems to be here. We saw several new and old names are throwing in their hat to run for president in 2020. The latest are Starbucks CEO and founder Howard Schultz.
Yeah.
And he got lambasted.
Freaked out because he's almost saying that he may run as an independent.
Yeah, but he's getting lambasted.
Yeah, because they don't want him splitting the ticket. They think it's a shoe-in to beat Trump, but not if some third-party guy comes in.
Yep.
Although it's possible that he'd get as many votes from take as many votes away from Trump as he would from the Democrats.
When's the last time an independent won for president?
Never. Oh, actually, no, that's not true. If you go back into the 1800s, there's a number of instances where offbeat parties won.
So, but the odds are not in their favor.
No, not in the modern era.
So what's the purpose of running independent? Because you feel that you're not capable of winning the party? Is that the issue? And if you're not,
I have no idea. It makes no sense to me that anyone would even try this. I think Ross Perot came close to maybe making a dent, but he chickened out at the end. Somebody threatened him, I guess.
Michael Bloomberg is getting close to running. He's threatening. He's telling us, everybody how bad Trump is, and he's running. I don't know if I don't know.
Yeah,
if,
Michael Bloomberg is on the short list for people running.
I don't know if the tactic.
Somebody out there will think that's hilarious.
Short list? Is he short?
Yeah.
No. He's a smart guy, but he's
Mr. Sourpuss.
Hard left.
Nobody likes that guy.
Yeah. Plus several more. I mean, we have a few different.
Oh, there's a ton.
Yeah.
So Kamala Harris out here in Oakland. She's announced.
AOC.
Tulsi Gabbard is running.
AOC.
AOC. She's not running. She's not old enough.
Right. She'll be in 2024, I guess.
She just got her driver's license. Just got old enough for that and bought her first bottle of beer.
There you go. Elizabeth Warren, who looks like she may even think about it, now plans to propose a tax of 2% on those with assets of $50 million to $1 billion, 3% with fortunes exceeding $1 billion. Tax would raise $2.75 trillion over a decade from about 75,000 families. This is going to create all sorts of problems because there will be lots of money leaving the U.S.
Well, it's a bad idea in general. I think a wealth tax is a good idea, but it has to be universal, and you have to eliminate the income tax, and it has to be a lot lower.
Yeah, this is going to cost people a chunk of money.
Yeah.
And finally, more airline woes. It seems that American Airlines removed a family from a plane last Wednesday after passenger and crew members complained that one of the family members smelled bad.
Yeah, stunk to high heaven, apparently.
Yep. Yossi Adler was asked to deplane the flight headed from Miami to Detroit after the team members were concerned about the comfort of other passengers due to the odor.
Yeah.
Now, what about those people that you get on a plane with and all of a sudden they start opening up an Italian sub or a Mexican tamale?
Yeah, salami, bologna sandwiches with a lot. It stinks up the plane.
I
think they should be thrown off, too.
Yeah.
It make you sick when you smell that. I don't know why. I mean, I like a bologna sandwich or a salami sandwich or a sub, but not in a plane, somebody else eating it next to me.
No.
Closed environment.
Nauseating. That's nauseating. All right, let's get over to our stock picks, and I got to give you the quick disclaimer here. This is a game that we play. It's not a solicitation to buy or sell any security. It's not a recommendation of any kind. Nothing on the show should be considered investment advice or a recommendation. If you choose to invest in any of the stocks mentioned, you should know that it may carry risk along with a risk of loss of principal. You should also seek out professional financial advice for your particular situation. We assume no risk as these are not to be considered recommendations. Horowitz, a company, myself, or John C. Dvorak may invest in any of the securities mentioned, and we will disclose that on the website under the weekly stock pick section. You go to dhunplugged.com and see all the days we discuss in the segment, along with the performance information from the date discussed, as well as additional important disclosures. Hey, that was a great read, don't you think?
Very good.
Wow. Gosh, that wasn't even on fast forward. All right, why don't you take the list?
Well, first of all, you have 6 shorts and 2 longs. And as the it's mixed. We got a mixed bag. We got a couple of shorts that are doing well. One of the shorts, Tesla, which is mine, is up 11%. Netflix, which is a short, I think that's yours.
That's mine. Yep.
And that's up 7. Medtronic, an insider's long, and a Starbucks short, which are
actually,
yours.
Actually, I think the Medtronics is yours.
The Medtronics is mine. It's a dead money. There's nothing going on there. And the other one's pretty close to dead money. It's Valvoline, my insider's buy recommendation because I smell a merger, is up 2.6%.
Yep.
Everything else is just nothing going on. Johnson & Johnson short, nothing. Apple short, down 2%.
I have one pick for tonight, which is going to be kind of a long shot here. Chapter 11-based PG&E Corporation. I'm going to short that. Mm. I don't know if I should put, you think I should put on like a extra like few percent for the stop or?
Well, because it may be going up a little more or they may, you could get burned. I don't think it's going to help, to be honest about it. If this thing, they all of a sudden say, okay, we're not going to go bankrupt and the thing skyrockets. It's 2 extra percent. It's not going to do anything.
All right. Well, we'll leave it there. We'll leave it at a normal 10% trailing stop is what we do automatically for these.
But I'll do a 20% on my pick.
Oh, what is that?
I'm going along with Selecta Biosciences.
Was it SLTA or something?
SLB.
SLB. No, that's Schlumberger.
No, SLB. Hmm. Oh, I'm sorry. SELB. I'm sorry.
SELB.
Seemed to have lost a letter there somehow.
All right. You're going S-E-L-B. Long.
Yeah.
Right, let me copy this.
This is bottom feeding. And it's also some insiders buying some stock.
Bottom feeding insiders.
Yeah.
Okay, that's show 441. Yeah, all these are available over on DH and Plug. You can check out
20% on that. It's $1.60. It's a penny stock.
19. It's, oh yeah, it is, huh? So it's 20%. Let's put 20%. And I'll put JCD pick. And then put it there, 131. All right. You want to plug your show?
The No Agenda show that's on every Thursday and Sunday at 9 o'clock live, or you can get the podcast from noagendashow.com.
I think that's the one.
That?
Yeah, that one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We have a show called No Agenda. It's great. And we got some good stuff coming up, as you can tell, because of the nature of the news out there.
Yeah.
Just completely out of control.
Well, plus what's really nice, somebody wrote me this week that says, you know, Andrew, you said something the other day and you talked about it, but you really should have looked into it more, just like they do on No Agenda, where they take the news and they, that's what he said, you got to deconstruct it. You got to look past what the headline is. You got to look past what the story is. Look what the reason why the person who's writing the story may have written it, what the angle is,
what are they up to?
Yeah, what are they up to? You got to be more like No Agenda sometimes. Like, okay.
What'd you do?
I mentioned something about Rand Paul going to Canada to get a hernia repair. And I got a whole discussion about how it was a private hospital. It wasn't part of the Canadian healthcare system. And it really, you know, the news was making it look this way, but it really wasn't. It's a good hospital, blah, 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 blah. So
that's probably true. They're probably right. Yeah, they gave you crap about it. That's what you
fine.
Deserve.
That's fine. I'll take it.
Yeah.
All right, until next week, I'll see you then.
Okay. All right, talk to you.